This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 169.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Jabra Pulse Wireless Sports Earbuds. They're perfect for runners with in-ear heart rate monitor so you can improve your training. And it's designed to be sweat and weatherproof in order to withstand the toughest running and training conditions. Listeners to this podcast can get exclusive offers and discounts by signing up at Jabra.com/MTA or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. Hello and welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we bring you part two of our listener Q&A about running injuries as we talk with special guest Dr. Ben Chateau. And in this episode's quick tip, Angie's going to share some moves that help strengthen IT band knees and feet. And to train for a marathon using our proven system, head over to marathontrainingacademy.com. All right, Angie, well excited to be bringing part two together here, and it's cool that we're releasing this so close to part one. We're going to be getting to that pretty quick, but before we do, Angie, anything unusual going on? This is a leading question. Unusual happened lately in the running world?
Well, I'm sure there's unusual things happening every day to runners across the world, but one thing that I wanted to highlight was that there's a new Guinness World Record for a half marathon time pushing a stroller. So at the Katy Half Marathon in Texas, Callum Neff finished in a time of 1 hour, 11 minutes, 27 seconds, pushing his daughter in a stroller. So, of course, this is awaiting Guinness World Record verification. But, you know, that's just a smoking fast time, even not pushing a stroller. I'm in awe. And I like the quote that he said at the end. He said, "The stroller gives mom a break and gets my girls outside, which they love. I wanted to show that being a dad and running competitively can both happen, and to promote people to get out with their kids." So I think you should put our kids in a jogging stroller and just take them out to give me a break.
I've done that before. The jogging stroller is called the Honda CRV.
You should use it more. Yeah, sadly, our children are too large for jogging strollers. It was very sad when ours was no longer large enough for them, but...
Although I'm sure our 11-year-old would rather sit in a jogging stroller than run himself.
Sadly, yes.
Well, that's really cool. So we recorded this episode so close to the last one that you still haven't gone to Phoenix to run the Lost Dutchman.
What is wrong with me? Still haven't gone.
Eventually, Angie's going to go do that.
You're trying to get rid of me.
It's probably doing it right now as you're listening to this.
Yes. And speaking of marathons, you have the New Orleans Rock and Roll Full Marathon coming up in a couple of weeks.
That's right.
How is your training going for that?
It's terrible.
What?
I'm such a lazy runner. I have not been training as good as I need to be. It's awful. Once again, folks, if you want to see what to do, look to Angie. I haven't trained solidly for a marathon since doing Chicago 2 years ago. That year was a better year. Like, I think I ran sub-4 at the Myrtle Beach Marathon, and then Chicago was okay too. I did, you know, 4:15. But since then, I've either had a twisted ankle or some kind of thing.
Or a case of lazy-itis.
Yes, that's the problem today.
Are you going to tell people how you were destroyed after your last long run? Laying on the floor, praying for death?
With sphincter spasms?
Yes.
Yeah, my last long run was supposed to be 20 miles. It ended up being 18 and some change. It was a trail run, and I felt really solid the first three laps. I run up on a 5.5 mile loop on a trail. The last loop, I just started really slowing down, started hurting in places I didn't know I had places, and got back to the car and just felt really nauseous. And then I was able to make it back home, and then I just didn't feel good at all. I felt like I was going to throw up, so I went and laid down. I was still sweaty and had my workout clothes on, so I just laid down on the floor. But you came in the room and found me laying on the floor, and you're like, "Get up, this is pathetic."
I kicked him a couple times for good measure.
No. She does lack compassion, but it's not that bad. But you know what? In the last week before that long run, I'd really cut back the carbs. I stopped eating almost any carbs at all, unless it was through vegetables. I mean, no fruit. And when it came to that long run, I just didn't have enough carbs on board to, I don't know what happened. I'm still experimenting with my body. I know people run in ketosis, but I can't do it apparently. So I'm going to carb up a little bit the night before I do that again.
So I pointed that out as you were laying on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, go eat some carbs. Go have a recovery drink now.
She brought me a roll of French bread. Beat me on the head with it.
I think I brought you a recovery drink. And you bounced back. You were fine then.
It's all about experimenting, seeing what your body can do, and not experimenting at the marathon, but experimenting during your long runs. So that's what I'm going to chalk it up to.
All right.
But let's move on. What's going on out there in MTA land?
We've got a couple of shout-outs here. The first one comes from Sarah in the Academy. She says, I achieved my first goal for 2016, which was to run every day from before Christmas until my birthday. The next stop is a 100-day running streak. My husband made this cool sign for me. It says, it's time to go running. And he gave me the book Better Than Before, which was quite timely given the latest podcast release. I'm looking forward to using some of the tools to help implement changes in other areas of my life. I also recently managed to get through a 7K trail run despite mud, rain, and puddles, and managed not to fall, which is a big win. Thanks so much. And that comes from Sarah in Australia.
Well, it's cool to have a support group like she has, you know, with her husband making her a sign to encourage her in her running goals. And that's something that we talk about in the Academy is thinking about who your support group is and creating one if you don't have one already, because running a marathon is going to take a lot of time, and it's just so much easier when you have a support system like that.
That's right. Life is so much more fun when you have great people to share it with.
So thank you for sharing that, Sarah, and keep up the good work.
This next note says, Hi, Angie and Trevor. Greetings from Tokyo. I came across your podcast a couple of months ago when I was supposed to be training for my first marathon, but was instead stuck in bed with pneumonia. I was incredibly lucky to get a place in the Tokyo Marathon. Despite terrible odds, less than 9% of applicants got in this year.
Wow.
And then getting sick right at the start of my training period was such a disappointment, as I'm a textbook upholder. Thanks for the book tip, she says. So another reference to the Gretchen Rubin podcast. So having 4 weeks of training wiped out was, in my mind, a catastrophe. Fortunately, my rebel partner, I can absolutely empathize there, Angie, kept telling me it'd be okay, that I could do it. He encouraged me to train the best I could and at least give it a go. I'm now tapering and getting ready for the big day on the 28th of this month. The real reason I'm writing is to say thank you. You guys are truly brilliant in the way you keep the podcast relatable to everyone. So many resources out there are clearly geared toward the fast and the furious, but the community you've created is a wonderful place for those of us who love running but still consider ourselves ordinary people. Also, being an expat in Japan, I'm a Finnish Australian living in Tokyo, I don't have a large support network of friends and family around me. Having you two in my ears through many miles of running and commuting has been wonderful. And she says, best wishes, and that comes from Ida.
So speaking of a support network, see, just like Ida has found a virtual support network through our podcast, you definitely can go out and create one if you don't have one, no matter where you are. And so cool that she's running the Tokyo Marathon, and I had no idea that it was so hard to get into that. 9%, what do they let, like 100 people in that race?
No, thousands and thousands. It's huge. I guess I better start applying for the lottery for that one, too. Yeah. I've been like focused on how hard it is to get into New York and London. I guess I better start adding the Tokyo lottery to my yearly lottery entries.
Every time I see you enter the lottery, I hear the words, may the odds be ever in thy favor.
Oh, yes.
Little Hunger Games reference there, folks. Well, we're glad that, Ida, that you found our podcast relatable. That's really what we're going for. We are not professional athletes. We do have elites on our show. We interview folks like that, but Angie and I are just everyday runners. I mean, I don't run every day, but you know what I'm saying. Angie, you did literally run every day last year.
I did. Makes me an everyday runner.
Yes. How many days a week are you running now?
About 4 or 5. It'll be, well, I guess it'll average out to 3 this week since I have the marathon this weekend. Doing a little tapering business here, but
you do something, though, every day, and the days you don't run.
Yeah, I'm doing yoga or strength training or something.
It's good for injury prevention, folks, and that's exactly what we're talking about on this episode, part 2 of our running injury Q&A with Dr. Ben Chateau. We're going to be talking about feet, like plantar fasciitis issues, and then we're going to talk about knees. If you've ever heard crunching in your knees, we're going to find out what that's all about, as well as a question about IT band and also running injury reoccurrence, how to deal with that. So lots of good stuff to get into. And just a reminder before we play this conversation that this is not meant to take the place of the advice given to you by your doctor or physical therapist. These are just basic principles, general principles, not therapy by podcast. So you guys know how it works. We're going to go ahead and jump into our conversation with Ben right now.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
Let's talk about the feet for a couple questions here. Lee wants to know, is there any risk of damaging yourself if you continue to train hard while having PF, plantar fasciitis, other than pain getting worse? Is there a risk of damaging yourself?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And the answer is yes, you can definitely do more damage if it's hurting that much.
I'm sure he knew the answer.
Continue to train.
He's notorious for pushing himself really hard. So,
well, it's really a big deal. I mean, I like to use sports analogies, but that's what sidelined Peyton Manning for a good part of the season this year was a plantar fasciitis tear. And so it can be very severe. And again, even if it's not severe, it can be painful enough that it affects your running and your training and your racing. And so you're never really at your 100%. So you can never really do what you want to do, which isn't, you know, unfortunate. We're all pretty type A. We always want a PR. We always want to do the next great thing. It's really hard to do the next great thing when your foot hurts really badly when you're trying to run. So at some point you need to take the time and address the issue. And if you don't and it continues to progress, it can get to the point, you know, even jokingly, you'll be in a wheelchair or at least in a walking boot, and running will not be an option for you, whether it's being fixed by surgery or time. And so you really need to address this issue. We've done a post, or I wrote one for you guys on Marathon Training Academy about plantar fasciitis that has a lot of good information on how to treat it from, you know, when it starts, just the triage portion of it, through more the chronic stuff, which is going to be working on the strength and mobility of the plantar fascia. And so I don't know Lee, but it sounds like you guys know him well, but he needs to, this is the time to do it. Back off the mileage and work hard on this. So when racing season starts, you'll be ready to go. Otherwise, you know, I'd hate to miss a whole season because you just didn't address it when you had the chance.
And this is another thing that can really turn chronic and be hard to get rid of, you know, if you don't address it early on. And I've seen that a lot, you know, just it's one of those things that you can run through it for a while, but then eventually you have to pay the price.
And once this one goes chronic, it is hard to get rid of. It really is a tough one. And so you need to address it early for sure, whenever possible. So I agree 100% with that. And again, it's just so unfortunate that you linger and at a 75% level until eventually it goes bad when you could address it early on. And so prevention in so many ways is really the key.
John wants to know, I've recently changed my form from predominantly heel striking to a forefoot strike. I think I could be a better runner in the long run for it, but calf and hamstring and forefoot pain has been affecting my training recently. Any input on whether changing form is a good idea? And if so, how to make that type of transition during training?
Yeah, this is a good question, and it really kind of brings up a whole other can of worms, is why change running style? There's indication for it for sure. If you're having a lot of injury or a particular injury that would cause you to need to change your running style, the research is very controversial on which is the best, right? Should you heel strike? Should you forefoot strike? Should you do the pose method or chi method? There's just a lot of stuff out there on it, but nothing is conclusive. And what I find is, on average, I don't like to change people's styles too much. It kind of is what it is, unless there's a reason to change it. So he doesn't really say why he wants to change the style, but he has now. And so what to do once you change style? So he's going probably from being a heel striker to more of a forefoot strike, it sounds like. And that's going to take some time. So he's dealing with some chronic overuse issue from the change in position that his feet are landing in. And so that's going to take some time to, again, develop that base for the muscles to handle the new load that's being given. That being said, I would say a quick transition is maybe 3 months to go through that transition. And for some, it might take up to a year to really feel comfortable running in a new way. And so that's why you want to really be sure you want to commit to that change
if you're going to make the change. Sometimes it's just easier to tweak your existing running form and kind of work with what you got. Otherwise, it can really slow you up. So one of the things I always recommend is just work on increasing your cadence time. If you can get that turnover just a little bit faster, which tends to shorten your stride for most a little bit, that will help some of these injuries that he's discussing. And the other side that I've already kind of alluded to is he just needs to work through the time it's going to take for his body to adjust. And so while he does that, he should be doing all the things we've already talked about, foam rolling, working on cross training, and trying to do whatever he can to triage those muscles as his body adapts to the new running form. And so it's likely to be a longer transition than you would want. And this is the exact same thing that happens when people transition from a regular shoe to more of a minimalistic style shoe, is it can usually take a lot longer than a person realizes. And so they try to rush the process and then, of course, end up injuring themselves trying to rush through this transition. And you really just need to take time to let your body adjust to the new loads that it's being asked to do. It's never a smooth transition in my experience.
Yeah, that's exactly what came to my mind when you were talking about that, is some people will, you know, buy a zero drop shoe and they're going from maybe a 10 millimeter drop down to zero drop and think they can just go out and do their long run in them right away. And I tend to caution people that they'll notice a lot of that calf and possibly ankle and foot pain if they make the transition too quickly. So yeah, definitely caution is in order there.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Judith, I guess, and Julie both have a question about metatarsalgia, and Judith is dealing with that, and she just wants to know, is this a normal injury for runners, and what to do about that? And then Julie kind of goes into the ball of her foot, a medial, and even the top of her foot has bothered me for a couple of years, and she's kind of wanting to know, is that the same issue or something else?
Yeah, those are good questions. Judith, in particular, what I don't like is that she's saying, is this a normal injury for runners? I would say no injury should be normal.
Right.
And so we don't want to think of it in that way. Something's obviously occurring that would cause this pain. And metatarsalgia it's a more nebulous kind of junk term. It can really stand for lots of different things. It's just pain in the ball of the foot, kind of where the base of the toes are. And it can be from stress fractures or neuroma. It can just be you have a more prominent metatarsal head, which is the bone right there as it connects to the toes. It can just be sticking out more, maybe a little less padding. You see this particularly in older runners, that padding is not as thick as it once was. There could be some other reasons for that as far as the structure of the foot that might cause pain in that area, but it's definitely not normal. And so it needs to be addressed before you start to develop some of the other conditions that can go along with it. And it's really a lot like plantar fasciitis as far as how you want to treat this particular condition. And so it's usually brought on by overtraining and poor mechanics. Poor shoes is another one. If you tend to wear a lot of heels, high heels, that is, that can also cause this. A tight Achilles can cause or lead to this condition. So a lot of the same risk factors for plantar fasciitis you'll see with metatarsalgia. And so you just need to start working through all the risk factors and then as you go through the treatment for it. And so, you know, is your shoes fitting you appropriately? Are they too tight? Are you wearing high heels during the day and that's what's leading to this particular problem? It is more common in women. Is your Achilles too tight, which again could go back to the heels? Do you just need more padding under that portion of your foot? Potentially orthotic might be indicated if you're having issues with your arch that could cause the way you're landing to affect the metatarsal head. So there's a lot to this one because it can be a real varied problem. But I would start with going back and reviewing the plantar fasciitis exercises and then work on some of the other things we've discussed, shorter stride length, quicker cadence, better shoes, watch your running surface. So if you're running a lot on concrete, a softer surface would be helpful. I prefer dirt or bark or even a nice running track in those cases. So there's a lot to that question, but never would an injury be normal, and it's definitely something that can be fixed and should be addressed. Increased weight is also another risk factor for this one too. Anything with your feet or your knees, if you're holding extra weight, that can put a lot of pressure on that system too.
Definitely. Now, you talked about the risk of, you know, wearing high heels being a risk factor for a lot of foot problems. Do you see maybe that feet problems can also be caused by too narrow of a toe box, whether it's in dress shoes or even in a running shoe? I mean, does that play into foot problems at all?
Oh, absolutely. That's a big one. Dress shoes are notoriously too narrow. And so the shoe itself can be a big problem, and not just necessarily, like you said, the running shoe, but what are you wearing the rest of the day? And so many times people are in a shoe basically from sun up to sundown, and they're not even taking time to walk around barefoot in their house, which would allow the foot some time to spread out and work on the small intrinsic muscles of the foot. So I always encourage some barefoot walking in the house or on grass is even better, just to strengthen those muscles. But really looking at the toe box is important, or not tying the shoestrings too tight.
Sure.
If you tend to have a shoe that's too tight, that also predisposes you to some of these neuromas and things like that that can develop. And they can be very painful, and they're hard to get rid of at times too. And so it's not just about running. We always like to blame running. The injuries because of the running. But so many of the injuries and things that people deal with have nothing to do with their running, and everything to deal with their daily life. So if it's too much sitting or too much standing on a hard surface, a bad fitting shoe, it just tends to manifest itself when you run and exert yourself a little bit. But the actual cause is probably unrelated to the running and is more of a normal daily activity problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think running can magnify issues that are already there, probably, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, absolutely. It just exposes your weak spots a lot easier. If you're sitting all day long, you don't tend to notice that your feet might hurt if you get up and move on them, because right. You never use them, right?
Exactly.
So as soon as you start running and getting around, then all of a sudden, man, I have all these issues, and they blame the running, but it's really not the running at all. That it's just exposing what was already there.
Well, let's talk about the knees. Here's a question from quite a few people, actually. I think Lou originally asked. He said, I hear crunching in both knees when I do squats and lunges. Zero pain, but just curious if that's a precursor to a possible issue down the road. So, and other people are like, yeah, I hear that too in my knees. What do you think about that?
Yeah, this is a question I get all the time, whether runners, non-runners, you know, knees in general tend to grind and pop a lot. What they're describing sounds a lot like what we would call is chondromalacia. And that's a mouthful, but it just talks about the cartilage on the backside of the kneecap. Sometimes that cartilage can be rough or uneven, or even start to soften a little bit. And so you'll hear or feel that grinding in certain movements. The most common ones are the ones they already alluded to, which would be squatting or lunging. And then typically the deeper you go in the squat, the more likely you are to hear it. The small mini squat, you might not notice it. Most of the time, this is going to be due to a patellar or a kneecap tracking problem. Sometimes it's also arthritis related, you know, especially if you get those ridges and bumps and things in the backside of the kneecap over time. It happens a lot in young kids, and then it tends to happen a lot again in that middle age time period. And the reason why it happens in kids is back to the imbalances. So kids are growing very fast, things are changing, they're hips and muscles and things that are growing are now growing at the same rate, right? The bones grow at a certain rate, then the muscles have to catch up. And so you'll just see these imbalances. And during that time, you might have pain, you might have grinding and popping. And then as they catch back up with themselves, it goes away. In the middle-aged population, you see it more, again, because of imbalances. And it's typically in strength and motion, but it's not because of growing. It's because of weakness. And again, back to the poor postures and chronic positioning that the person gets into. You do tend to see this a little bit more, I think, in women than you do in men, and that has to do with the shape of the hips, what we call the Q angle. So the Q angle is basically just the angle that is formed from the hip bone down to the knee bone, and just that V shape that tends to happen. So women tend to have a little wider hip so they can have children, which is great, but that does cause problems potentially at the knees. So women tend to have a few more knee problems because of it. And you'll see alignment issues with the knee where maybe they're more knock-kneed a lot of times, or they'll not only will the knees go in, but their toes will flare out at the same time. And of course, weight can play into this as well. So the heavier a person is, the more likely they're going to have issues with this. So to specifically answer their question is, yes, they're not having pain right now, but there's obviously grinding and popping occurring. And if that happens over a long period of time, you will likely wear that tissue out sooner. And so the fix for that is kind of a multifaceted approach. First of all, I'm a big fan of supplementation, especially in athletes and things where people are really exerting themselves above and beyond the normal person. And so a glucosamine type supplement would probably be a good idea just to help preserve the cartilage layer. There's some good research on that, particularly with animals, but some for humans too, where that is a good supplement and helpful. But beyond that, I would look at back to the same thing that we talked about earlier in the podcast, is that hip strength is really a critical component to this, because your hips control the way your femur works, and your femur is that long bone in your leg. It's where the trochanter attach is part of that whole complex of your trochanter, your hip, all the way down to your knee joint. And the hip muscles affect how that bone rotates. And so if it's rotating inward too much, it's going to put a lot of stress on the knee and how that kneecap is tracking. So as the strength of the hips improve, it coordinates that rotation better and decreases it some, and that allows for a better alignment of the patella or the kneecap through motion. You combine that with quad weakness and tightness, and it just kind of amplifies the whole thing. So for these guys, it sounds like they're already working on squatting and lunging, which is great. So we can assume maybe their quadricep strength is good. So we need to go up the chain a little bit further and really work on the hip strength portion of that. And I think we've talked about this in some of the articles on the blog, but some exercises are like sidestepping with the band, side planks. Again, the single leg squat is a great exercise, or single leg deadlift. Anything to work though that glute medius, which we've talked about, and some of the rotators of the hip to make sure you get good tracking of the knee. But I would try to address it if possible, just as a prevention, if nothing else, because it is possible over time that's going to wear out and cause pain, even though it isn't currently.
Excellent. A couple ladies had a question about long-term solutions for iliotibial band syndrome. They say, all I do right now is foam rolling post-run when I can fit it in, and symptomatic foam rolling. So anything else that you can add to what they should be doing to, you know, keep ITBS at bay?
Yeah, I think they already know the answer to this question, because they already put in there, when I can fit it in.
Right.
The biggest problem with runners, and probably the biggest problem with everyone, is just time. Time's a big factor. And so everyone wants to skimp out where they can. And so the prevention part of it, the cross-training part of it, is usually the first to go, because runners like to run. They don't want to do other things. They want to run. And that's where you get yourself into trouble, because you end up getting these injuries that were preventable, because most running injuries are all preventable if you'll take the time and put as much effort as you do in your training, as you do your recovery and your cross-training and your prevention. And so to address this particular issue, they're on the right track. They should be foam rolling regularly. They need to again, like the previous question, work on the hip strength portion of their body, because that's usually associated with IT band pain. And then even looking at the way a person runs, back to that narrow running gait can cause problems with IT band issues. And so widening that base out a little bit can help prevent IT band pain, as well as shin splints. Looking at your cadence, if you can increase that cadence just a little bit, that tends to help prevent IT band pain. But in general, the most important thing you can do is be consistent with your cross training and be consistent with your recovery protocols, which should include foam rolling and then working on that hip strength.
And I kind of tell my coaching clients, if they can multi-purpose, you know, people are busy, but even if they watch like a few minutes of TV in the evening, you know, get on the foam roller while you're watching TV. You know, you can kind of make it worth your while. Listen to a podcast, something to maybe take your mind off maybe the boredom or the pain that comes in when you're having to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I agree. I have to distract myself a little bit, but I think folks just need to keep in mind that if you can put some effort towards that recovery, put some effort towards your cross training, you can train at a much higher level without risk of injury. And that's what, you know, their ultimate goal is, right? Is they have some sort of running goal. And so they want to meet that goal. And the best way to do that is to stay injury free. And the way we stay injury free is to take the time to work through these recovery protocols and these cross training protocols. And it really will pay off. Doesn't eliminate everything, but it can make a big difference.
Definitely.
And we'd just like to take a minute to thank this episode's sponsor, an amazing company called Jabra. They make devices for runners. They make all kinds of cool stuff, but they make this in-ear heart rate monitor built into earbuds. I've been running with them and love them. They're called the Jabra Pulse Sport. And we have a podcast listener who won a free pair when he entered the drawing last month. So congrats to Matt Millard, if you're listening to this, for winning that. And they're doing another drawing in February. So at the end of February, everyone who goes to jabra.com/MTA and gets on their newsletter, give them your name and email, and you'll be added to their newsletter list. And you'll be entered the drawing, and a winner will be chosen to get a free pair of the Jabra Pulse Sport, a high quality pair of earbuds with in-ear heart rate monitoring. It works with all running apps. So those of you out there that love to get the numbers and track progress and get instant feedback and keep track of heart rate, distance, pace, cadence, and all that good stuff, you can do that and literally get instant readings as you're running. Everything's being tracked with the Jabra Pulse Sport. Check them out. They're pretty amazing. That's jabra.com/MTA.
So here's a question from Naomi and a couple other ladies, Joelle and Trisha, wanted to know some thoughts on prevention of injury reoccurrence. So nagging, stubborn injuries, for some people it's like hip flexors. Is it all in the strength or core training and yoga? And what else can they do to prevent being sidelined from these reoccurring running injuries?
Another good question. The rule number one is your recovery work should be as programmed into your training cycle as the actual runs.
Yeah.
And so whatever plan a person's using, there should be a recovery portion of that plan and a cross-training portion of that plan. And that's going to be your biggest benefit. And that's going to prevent the injuries from occurring. Now, if you're getting these, you know, you're kind of prone to plantar fasciitis, I think she mentions hip flexor tightness, that's when, as part of your plan, you have those, that spot training time to address these issues. I usually have people do this at the end of their runs. They have their normal warm-up, they do their training run, and then as part of their cool-down, they're going to take their one or two problem areas and really spend an extra 10, 15 minutes addressing those issues. And it's really important that it's consistent. So many people want to do this for a week, 2 weeks, like, hey, I did it for a while, and now I'm good. And it just has to be a long-term thing in a person's head that, you know, I run, I train, and I recover. And all your elite athletes, if you talk to them about some of their keys to success, they spend so much time on their recovery. And they tend to sleep a ton. They sleep way more than novice athletes, which most people don't realize. And that goes right back to the recovery. But it's just such a critical component. The hip flexor tightness, you see that a lot with chronic sitting. So this is a big problem for folks getting injured or, you know, having tightness in the hip flexors with destination races. So they're going to sit and travel someplace, maybe have a day before the race. They do the race, and then they got to rush back home, and so they're sitting in the car again. And, of course, you're going to have some sore back. You're going to have a tight hip flexor. You're just cramped instead of taking that time to recover, walk around, and give it a couple of days. We just don't have the time in our daily life, most of us. And so it's going to be a chronic problem. And so you just keep it in the back of your mind that that's part of par for the course. You're going to deal with these things. And if you recover and you do the cross training appropriately, you shouldn't have an injury. It should just be something you're always kind of working towards. As part of every cross training strategy, I think core training needs to be part of that. There's some good research on speed work and how it can affect speed work in a positive way. We know back pain is a very common ailment, you know, population wide, and the same as runners and as non-runners. And so when we're looking at the cross training and recovery, definitely core work should be part of that. And, you know, yoga or whatever else you like to do, I think it's a good thing. It came up last week, is cross training count if I'm running on a trail and then I'm running on a treadmill, or I'm running uphill and I'm running downhill. Like, no, that doesn't really count as crushing. It really needs to be something different.
Yes.
It can be somewhat related. I mean, you can play basketball, which does have running, but it's different. But you need to do something different as part of that cross training. It could be P90X like you guys were doing. It could be aqua, swimming. But it needs to be something different to stimulate the system different. And that will go a long way to preventing those injuries.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, especially for maybe older or injury-prone runners, trying to make sure that cross training that they do is low impact will provide a big benefit for them, and especially focus on core training, strength training, those kind of things will really help balance out those running muscles and hopefully won't set them up for an overuse injury.
Yeah. And I think, I know you read a lot, Angie, and I do as well. And there's a lot of fascinating books on running and the crazy things people are able to do, Dean Karnazes type stuff. But those books are interesting because most of us can't do that.
Right.
And so don't expect your body to be as bulletproof as these guys. It's just not likely to happen. You're probably not the next Dean Karnazes. Those folks are amazing and interesting because they're unique. And so the rest of us, we're going to have to take a little bit more time. The cool thing is like your tagline, which I love, is that everyone can run a marathon, but it doesn't mean everyone's going to run a marathon like Meb.
Right.
Exactly. So there's a difference there. And so if you take the time to work through these things, we can all run that marathon. We can all enjoy running for a lifetime. But the key is to know your body and work within your limits and go from there and not try to be someone that you're not. And that's okay, because your journey and everyone's journey is a little bit different. And if you take it at that approach, there's no reason why you should be getting injured as you do these things. You should be able to identify a problem as it's coming up, deal with it, and then move on.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point that you make, because we can gain inspiration and even training tips from a lot of these books or elite runners that, we come across. But definitely know yourself, know your weaknesses, and don't neglect the areas that you need to be working on and, think that you can run 100 miles a week and be like them. So yeah, that's a good point.
And I guess one final question is from Steve. He says, what are some keys to injury prevention for masters runners? So I know like everything you've said would apply, but anything additional that you would like to add for someone who's a masters runner, which is what, Angie, 40 and older?
Yeah, they consider it 40 usually.
I think we got to change that definition.
We're heading to master status, huh?
Yeah, that's too close. It's funny to think of it that way. But what's amazing about running is you see people of all ages. You go to these races and it's, you've got people that are 10, 12 years old, and I've seen a few younger folks. And then you've got people that are, I think there was that one lady that was a 90 or 100 mm-hmm. that did the marathon. And so it can really be a wide range of abilities, a wide range of ages. And it's just, that's why running is so fun and it's so interesting. And if anyone's never done a race, they really need to just go and experience the differences in people, shapes, sizes, abilities. It's just such a fun time and so interesting. And I'm such a people watcher, so it's always fun for me to do those things.
Yes.
But specifically for masters runners, we all know when we're young, we're a little bit more bulletproof and we can get away with things that we probably shouldn't have just because we're young. Sooner or later, that catches up to us. The question is when. So everyone ages at a different rate. I rarely ask age because it doesn't matter chronologically. It's more biologically and how a person's aging. A lot of that's genetic. And then there's environmental factors and luck is a huge one. So if you've had bad luck and been in a couple of car wrecks, well, your body might be way older than someone that's had good luck and has never slipped or tripped or fallen or been in a wreck or anything. So there's those things to consider. But in general, older runners just need to take a little bit more time in their recovery. The mileage that they can put in usually decreases, and that's okay. Their body, aerobically and physically has a pretty good base if they've done it for long periods of time. They don't have to train quite as hard necessarily. There's going to be that time where you peak, and then now it's kind of slowly tapering down over your life, and you just need to be okay with that. I think the colonel that you interviewed really kind of hit that home that he's done so many marathons, but at some point he realized the speed is just going to decrease, but he could still run it, and it's an amazing thing that he does. So as a person's aging and as they're listening to their body, just take more time with that recovery protocol. You probably need to work a little bit more with your nutrition. We tend to gain a little bit of weight as we increase in age because we lose lean muscle mass. And so working on strengthening becomes even more important for an older runner, just to prevent injury, to maintain muscle mass, as that tends to decrease with aging in general. And really work on hydration too. Dehydration during a race is a little controversial, but in general, I think people tend to not drink enough. And then, you know, the older a tissue gets, the less hydrated it tends to want to stay. You just have to be a little bit more conscious about drinking more fluids, or at least eating foods that are high water content. It might even be a better strategy with the more vegetables and things like that. But more than anything else, warm up longer and cool down longer, and work through that recovery protocol religiously. And hopefully we'll hear about some of your, you know, members being 90 and 100 years old. I'll do a marathon. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
I think we have someone in the group who's 70.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my coaching clients is 70. And I love it during a race when I see, you know, somebody who's got white hair that passes me. And I'm like, you know, that is so awesome. They're out here. And they're clearly kicking my butt. It just gives me hope that, like you said, age, chronological age doesn't mean anything. Age is just a number, and it's all about how you feel and how you take care of yourself. And
yeah.
I remember running a half marathon in Oklahoma, and on an uphill section, this guy, he's probably 70, just flies by me and says, "Keep up the good work, buddy." And he keeps going.
I have to admit, that's happened to me as well. So I think we all have a story like that.
I want to be like that guy.
Yeah. I want to be like that guy now. I don't want to wait until 70 to be that way. But it's what's so amazing about running is it's accessible for all ages and all groups of people.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the important thing. As long as you're having fun with it and you still want to run, there's really no reason why you shouldn't. And hopefully, you know, everyone out there realizes that running is not going to increase the aging process. It's not going to cause you to have knee arthritis faster. It's not, you know, those are myths of running. If you've already had an injury, maybe it can increase your risk. But otherwise, running is good for you, and it's not going to break you down more just because you're running. So that's usually things that non-runners like to tell runners, oh, you're going to have bad knees, or you're going to have this. And that's not necessarily the case. You can get arthritis just as easy from running as you can from sitting on your couch. So it's not really a predictor as far as those things are concerned. But the important thing is just to stay active and love it
over
a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for answering these questions and being on the podcast today, Ben. Folks, if you want to check out what Dr. Ben is up to, you can find him at our website, Marathon Training Academy. You can also find him at thephysicaltherapyadvisor.com.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time and talking with your audience. It's fantastic. And again, if they want to dive deeper into some of these topics, we've written about a lot of them on your website and then on mine too. So just throw in some keywords and you should be able to find some good information. And also pictures of a lot of the exercises and programs are included in there. So if you want more details, it's there.
Perfect.
Thanks so much, Dr. Ben. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed that Q&A with Dr. Ben Chateau. We are teaming up with Ben to put together an ultimate resource for running injury prevention and treatment. Exactly what he does and how he helps patients that come to him get over some of the things that we've been talking about, you know, plantar fasciitis, IT band friction, just all kinds of injuries that we're going to go into. You know, definitely the most common injuries that you see crop up during running, plus more. And also in this course is going to be some training lessons that Angie has put together about how she is able to run so many marathons, so many miles every year while doing smart injury prevention and keeping herself from being sidelined by major injuries. Because Angie, something I've heard you say before is that you actually see yourself as an injury prone runner. So explain what you mean by that.
Yes, I mean that if I'm not careful and deliberate about preventing injuries, that an injury could easily crop up. I mean, I've had things like ITBS with my first marathon that I had to battle back from. And I've had high hamstring issues. I've dealt with plantar fasciitis in the past. But thankfully, because I'm careful about doing the exercises and the stretches and taking the rest time that I need, I've been able to keep going with my running goals and run 40 plus marathons.
So we wanted to put together something that would be like the ultimate course for running injury prevention and self-treatment. And we're going to be announcing through our email list and on Facebook how you can find out more about this course. So if you're interested, definitely head over to our website and get on our newsletter list if you're not on it already. And when you join that list, you'll get a free resource called the Runner's Toolbox, which has some highly recommended inexpensive products that Angie uses every week to help her combat injury. So just a heads up on that, folks. That's something that we got in the works. Now, for this episode's quick tip, we wanted to give you some suggestions on moves, different moves you can do to help with injuries pertaining to the feet, knees, and IT band. So I'm going to go ahead and let Angie come in and talk about that here. Come on in, Angie.
Can I come in?
You never went anywhere.
Okay, I'm here. Yes, I think it's so important that a person be really diligent about strength training and preventing some of these injuries, because we all know it's extremely frustrating when you have an injury and you're not able to do the running and the races that you want to do. So I wanted just to give about four strength training exercises that can be very helpful for preventing IT band, knee, and feet issues. And one thing I like to do specifically for the feet is that when I'm doing strength training, I like to do it barefoot or in a minimalistic shoe. And that really demands that your foot and ankle muscles do a lot more stabilizing just to keep you balanced. So that's one thing that you can do for your feet to build strength is gradually do some exercises barefoot, do some balancing exercises. You'll really feel those feet and ankle muscles making all those tiny microscopic corrections to keep you steady and balanced. So that was one thing I thought I'd throw out there for a lot of the exercises that we recommend. You know, if you can safely do them barefoot, that's the way to go to build feet strength for sure.
Right on.
The first exercise I'd like to recommend is the one-leg squat, or it's also known as the pistol squat. Now, if this seems impossible to you at first, just start with regular squats to build up some strength here. And you're going to want to make sure when you do squats to make sure that you sit back and that your knees don't go beyond your toes. So you want to keep your knees behind your toes. So if you're feeling comfortable with regular squats, then you can go to the one-leg squat. And this is going to require a lot of balance, which is good for the lower leg muscles. And you'll just stand on one leg, say the right leg with your knee slightly bent, and bring the left leg out in front of you a little bit. And then just start to bend that right knee and start to squat down, squatting back, and then just come up to the standing position again. And these are challenging. You know, if you want to stand near a wall so you can grab a wall if you lose your balance, that might be good to start out with as well. And then, of course, do the equal number on the other side.
And like how many would you do? How many reps?
You may only be able to do like five at first, so maybe do three sets of five, and then build your way up till you can do, you know, 20 per side. So it's, you know, it's all about starting small, especially if you've never done any kind of strength training before, but it's important that you begin somewhere. The second exercise is the reverse lunge with a knee lift. So for the reverse lunge, you're going to start with your feet about hip width apart, and you're going to step your right leg back into a lunge position. Again, with a lunge, you always want to make sure that your knees are staying behind your toes. And then as you come back up to the starting position, bring that right knee up to your chest. So it's going to require some balance. And then as you come back again, go into the reverse lunge again. And as you come up, bring that knee to your chest. And then you do, you know, 10 to 15 on the right side and do the same thing on the other side. And one thing I like about doing one-legged exercises is that it really forces that side to work. Because if you're doing strength training with both legs, sometimes your dominant or your stronger side will take up the slack for the weaker side. But if you're training each side separately, then you're really forcing those muscles to fire and contract like you want them to. The third exercise is a one-leg balance. And basically here, just stand on one leg, raise the other off the floor. Always keep a slight bend in the knee of the leg that you're standing on. And if you want to add more challenge to it, you can raise the left knee up to your chest and lower and raise and lower. And that's going to require more balance, more strength. I recommend standing on that one leg for about 60 seconds per side. And again, if you're going to feel tipsy, then you kind of stand by a wall and you feel like your balance is starting to go, you can correct it real quick. And of course, then repeat that one leg balance on the other side.
So that doesn't sound very hard, just standing on one leg for 60 seconds?
It doesn't sound very hard, but as you get to about 30, 40, 50 seconds, you're going to feel that your ankle and your feet muscles are kind of starting to quiver a little bit. It depends on how much balance work you do. If you do a lot of yoga, then you may have very good balance, but for some, 60 seconds doesn't seem like a long time until you're like doing something like a plank or standing on one leg. So, you know, there's definitely ways to make it more challenging. If you can do 60 seconds, it doesn't feel challenging, then start adding some movement into it. You know, bringing a leg up to your chest or kicking the opposite leg behind you and maintaining your balance. So there's a lot of ways just to keep it challenging.
So in the past, I've heard about these kind of moves, you know, either I've heard you talk about them or other experts talk about them. And I've thought, I don't know, it just seems too simple. Like, okay, go stand on a leg. Doing little moves like this, having a routine where, you know, you're doing it regularly, how much difference does it actually make? These are sort of the skepticism that's in my head. And then I go and get injured because
right.
I don't do any of it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and sometimes you think it has to be like this long, rigorous, hour-long strength training routine. And that can kind of put people off from even starting in the first place. But even adding 10, 15 minutes two or three times a week can make a big difference. It kind of reminds me of a quote that we used a couple episodes back. An imperfect something is better than a perfect nothing. So even if you feel like you don't have a lot of time to commit to it at first, just commit 10 minutes twice a week and start with that. And then as you get stronger and that becomes a habit in your life, try to add a few more minutes on. Try to add a few more exercises in. You know, it's all about being consistent over time, and that's what's going to keep you, you know, running strong and healthy for a lifetime.
So, Angie, what is the fourth maneuver they could do to help with IT band and knee and feet issues?
The fourth one is called negative calf raise. And so this is one where you want to step and just kind of keep the ball of your foot on the step and let your heels drop down toward the floor. So it's really going to, you're going to really feel a stretch in your calf muscles. And in fact, this is just a really good stretch to do for your calves by itself. But then raise up on your toes so you're contracting the calf muscle and then slowly lower again till they drop off the edge. And do this 20 times. Do about 3 sets of that, and it'll give your calves a good stretch, a good workout, and, you know, build some strength in that area.
All right, good. Now, remember, folks, these are moves to do to strengthen muscles that are uninjured. If you have an injury, your physical therapist will probably have you doing something different, so just listen to him or her, okay?
That's right.
And we hope you're not injured at the moment. If you are, don't get discouraged. You can fight your way back and get over this injury. It's going to take some time, so be patient with it. It's a process. But we believe in you, and thank you so much for listening to this podcast. We appreciate all of you out there. It's always fun to hear from you. We have a contact page over on our website if you want to send us a message anytime. That brings us to the end. We're going to sign off by reminding you, as always, that you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Well on my way, well on my way.